Hi everyone, I'm Mark Gaspar. Welcome to No Spoiler Reviews, the podcast for movie reviews with the surprises left in. If you ever felt like you've already seen the film by just reading a review or had the story spoiled by its trailers, then this is the podcast for you. Apologies for the delay in this November podcast. Unfortunately, illness got in the way there, but as a consequence, you'll now have two episodes that are really close together. In this episode, you'll find all the latest No Spoiler Reviews, including Sylvester Stallone in his recut version of Rocky IV, Kirsten Stewart as Princess Diana in Spencer, Edgar Wright's time travel horror movie Last Night in Soho, and Ghostbusters Afterlife with McKenna Grace and Finn Wolfhard. So if that's your kind of thing and you don't like knowing the ending before you start, then let's get into the ring with Dolph Lundgren and Sylvester Stallone in the recut version of Rocky IV, Rocky vs. Drago, the ultimate director's cut. So with a revisited 2001 edit, Rocky IV, Rocky vs. Drago takes us back to one of the most divisive movies ever in the Rocky series. Rocky, as played by Sylvester Stallone, is now the champion of the world. Yet his former adversary turned friend Apollo Creed, as played by Carl Weathers, still hungers for more. So when Dolph Lundgren's Russian boxer Ivan Drago arrives in America seeking a fight with an ambivalent Rocky, Apollo sees his chance. Though by deliberately pushing both his fitness and Rocky's friendship to the limit, has Apollo put more than his own reputation in jeopardy? With more than just national pride in the balance, the deeper question for Rocky becomes, should he even stop Apollo, let alone try? Well, re-entering the ring 36 years later and at the grand old age of 75, writer, director and star Sylvester Stallone thinks he should. If there's an overriding comment to make about Rocky IV, Rocky vs. Drago, it is one of course correction. Abruptly starting without any fanfare, Stallone quickly puts his character's cut on a much leaner diet of character conflict and consequence. Deliberately teasing us with an initial flashback, Rocky quickly considers his life as a failure. As the seconds hemorrhage away in his eventual successful bout with Mr. T's James Clubber Lang, as per Rocky III, Stallone now clearly sees Rocky as someone with something to lose. Running counter to this, though, is a sense of risk, as embodied by Carl Weathers' Apollo Creed. With a new, more insightful handling of Apollo's character, this new cut of Rocky IV sees Apollo aching for his old life. So when Drago, a younger, all-conquering fighter from Russia, arrives in the USA, it's far more than just his patriotism that is piqued. Whereas Rocky can see the risks in taking such a bout, Apollo can only see the rewards. And if anything, it's in this first half that this director's cut is at its strongest. Whereas the original Rocky IV was a movie drowning in patriotism bordering on hyperbole, this new cut of Rocky IV wants to dial it all back to just the actual fights this time. Far more protracted and less informed by any dramatic considerations, many of Rocky IV's air punches now make their connection. Apollo Creed rightly gets the send-off he deserved, and Dolph Lundgren's Drago doesn't feel like a beefed-up bunny in history's headlights. So whilst Brigitte Nielsen and Burt Young's roles have been sacrificed to do this, it has to be said the result is all the better for it. As with Talia Shearer's eponymously shrill, "You can't win," echoing through the third act, the latter half is much more akin to the 1985 original. With its so 80s that it hurts montages as provided by the group Survivor, who clearly wanted to sound like the band Foreigner, look them up kids, it seems there are just some editing decisions that not even Rocky can dodge. So whilst a midway 4-minute pop video might arguably drag the plot along, they still feel like remnants of a Cold War that Stallone now wants to pour cold water on. Also, by additionally shearing off its dubiously iconic slash Irojima-like end frame, this version's non-conclusion makes it pretty clear that there's a much bigger fight than the one on the screen. This is because in Rocky IV, Rocky vs. Drago, Stallone clearly wants to jettison the jingoism and embrace the character-driven catharsis of the more recent Rocky spin-offs. So, by waving goodbye to a patriotic popcorn pleaser that many found just too salty, it would seem that Sly, like Rocky, believes that, if I can change, then maybe you can change. In watching this new version of Rocky IV, it's clear he wouldn't have got back into the ring if he didn't think it was worth it. And, in short, it is. You can rent Rocky IV, Rocky vs. Drago, the ultimate director's cut, now at Amazon Prime, iTunes, Xbox, and most of the other online retailers. So having survived an all-out assault on your senses, maybe it's time to move to a colder, quieter kind of war in director Pablo Larraín's Spencer, where Kirsten Stewart is a princess trapped in a loveless marriage. Driving through England's green and pleasant land, Diana Spencer, as played by Kirsten Stewart, is lost in more ways than one. Known to the world over as the Princess of Wales, Diana is now a stranger to the dynasty that she married into. With a Christmas pantomime ahead of her, with a family who openly despairs of her, how long can she keep up the charade until something finally snaps? Well, in terms of a strict historical retelling of Princess Diana's departure from the House of Windsor, this is something that we're really never likely to know nor see. Yet in the hands of director Pablo Larraine and screenwriter Stephen Knight, Spencer neither makes any direct claim to do so either. Instead, their film is all about feeling, and unlike 2013's turgid Diana, this is a much better movie for it. In choosing to deliberately focus on the staff who are caught between either caring for Diana or just carrying on as normal, Kirsten Stewart's invited interloper is deliberately left to ricochet inside an empty house. With only Sally Hawkins' housemate as a sole confidant, the film leaves Timothy Spall's dour equerry to single-handedly say the most by never actually saying anything at all. Yet, as a piercing portrait of fragility, Kirsten Stewart's performance says everything. From her doe-eyed, over-the-shoulder glances to her crisp English diction which splinters all of the etiquettes around her, this is an Oscar nomination, if not in the bag, well, it's certainly in the post. With arms permanently wrapped around her body as if in an ongoing act of self-consolation, Radiohead's Johnny Greenwood's score completes this on-screen portrait. Offering Diana up as a breezy jazz trumpet, forever looking to break free, Greenwood then systematically drowns them both with low funereal dirges, as if it was deemed so as a matter of royal protocol. With Diana arriving late to every scene, whether that be for sandwiches or shotguns, this becomes a film that doesn't need a car crash to prove its point. By assembling all of its main characters for duty amid a toxic Christmas celebration, Spencer instead becomes the clear fragments of a dream that was smashed upon arrival. Forever being the last one to the table and the first on everyone's mind, this fictionalized scaffold of Diana's last days is unquestioningly an edifice to admire. Whilst no one will ever really know what she had to endure, the real truth of Spencer is that Diana's isolation is clearly one that many others had a hand in. You can now see Spencer for yourself worldwide on Amazon and iTunes. Okay, so now it's time to cut to London streets, which are not always paved with gold, in director Edgar Wright's Last Night in Soho, with Thomasin McKenzie, Anya Taylor-Joy, Matt Smith, and Diana Rigg. When 1960s obsessed fashion student Ellie Turner, as played by Thomasin McKenzie, is accepted at London's prestigious College of Fashion, it's like a dream come true. Yet, that's not the only dream that Ellie's used to experiencing. Well accustomed to seeing her suicidal mother invading her waking moments, Ellie is also transported to London's swinging 60s inside her dreams each night. Yet 1960s London turns out to be not so golden, as Ellie's waking dreams and real-life anxieties violently clash in an unsolved murder. Well, from its opening scene with actress Rita Tushingham and later with Diana Rigg and Terence Stamp fully on board, Edgar Wright's Last Night in Soho has bags of instant 1960s pedigree. Luxuriant and high on period detail, the music cues echoes Ellie's choices and the movie runs on rails for the first half hour. Dropping you down later into its time-traveling rabbit hole, Ellie follows Anya Taylor-Joy's Sandy, an ambitious cabaret singer, as they walk side by side in alternate realities. Perfectly reflected throughout, the camera moves with each actor performing opposite one another, and the effect is beyond anything you're used to seeing with a green screen. Throw in also director Edgar Wright's appetite for detail, and fans of Baby Driver and his other movies are definitely going to find a lot to enjoy. Seen in comparison to Julian Temple's 1986 lush homage Absolute Beginners, Last Night in Soho aims for a vision of the 1960s with a deliberately decaying sodium hue. For just as Ellie's world turns upside down in a sublime needle drop moment using Susie and the Banshees' Happy House, ghost-like figures tumble out of the 1960s, much akin to 1990s Jacob's Ladder. And here, if there is a weakness to be found, it is the movie's tone. I'll explain. As a director, Edgar Wright likes to do two things: mix genres and lace his movies with well-crafted nods to previous films that have inspired him. And that's all fine, and he does it fantastically well. Nevertheless, within both of these fascinations lies a problem. In attempting to mix genres mid-film, it potentially weakens the movie's overall impact. Last Night in Soho is meant to be a horror film. However, it isn't that scary. Also, when you start to recognize all of its in-jokes, then those risk becoming your focus rather than the main story and its characters. That all said, Last Night in Soho is a really fine film with great stylish flair, breathtaking special effects, and superb performances to match. So if you want to forget all your troubles and forget all your cares, then I suggest you head downtown with Edgar Wright. He's waiting for you, and things will be great. So if you'd like to visit Last Night in Soho, you can now do it so by Amazon and iTunes. Now, in the last of our no-spoil reviews for this month's episode, it's time to welcome back the father and son ghostbusting duo of Jason and Ivan Reitman, who have nursed the sequel that we've all been waiting for in Ghostbusters Afterlife. In Ghostbusters Afterlife, it seems that the future can be an uncertain place for a single mother and her two children. Even by relocating to a decrepit farmhouse in Oklahoma, it's almost as if their bad luck has followed them. This is because their new home is a town reeling from unexplained earthquakes. However, an even darker secret lies buried in the children's grandfather's barn. Asleep under dusty sheets, the children discover a hearse from another time. Filled with paranormal technology, maybe it can hold back the ghosts that are now busting out of the ground. Because when it's 36 years later and Gozo the Destroyer is looking to lay waste to the earth, who are you seriously going to call? Well, Ghostbusters 3, now titled Ghostbusters Afterlife, has been a long time in answering that question. Seemingly forever stuck in development hell, then misfired in 2016 as an all-female reboot and later usurped by the likes of Stranger Things, the Ghostbusters franchise looked like a busted flush. Yet original director Ivan Reitman and son Jason Reitman, who helms Ghostbusters Afterlife, never let go of the light. And you'll be glad they didn't. Relocating and rebooting the franchise in the fictional sleepy town of Somerville, Oklahoma, this movie isn't a cash-in or slavish fan service reheated into being exactly the same story as before. This Ghostbusters story is new. Never keen to show its hand too early, Ghostbusters Afterlife brings on all the details slowly and succeeds in being entertaining both for those new and old to the ghostbusting scene. Built around the presence of the kids, you'd think that Stranger Things' Finn Wolfhard as Trevor would be center stage, but in fact the limelight and the film itself belongs to McKenna Grace as Phoebe. Glasses permanently perched over an inquiring gaze, she asks the tough questions, makes the tough decisions, and drags Paul Rudd's schoolteacher into their paranormal quest. Every inch a Ghostbuster out of uniform but not out of time, she is the rightful heir to the franchise's science meets spooks comedic appeal. The parents flap and flounder around amusingly with Carrie Coon as the kid's mother, and the aforementioned Paul Rudd decently channels both hopelessness and haplessness when sporting some really deft drop-dead lines. History is safe, whereas science is giving yourself the plague and gambling on survival. Which, if you think about it, is a hell of a brave joke in the current climate. Nevertheless, this is typical of the whole movie. Whereas Bill Murray's Dr. Peter Venkman thumbed his nose at authority in the first two Ghostbuster movies, Gil Kenan and Jason Reitman's script doesn't give a damn about the now that we find ourselves in and just goes all out for entertainment. The film is beautifully shot and refreshingly airy and light in its choice of colours and daylight scenes. The CGI effects are an improvement on the previous Ghostbusters movies, and much like the film itself, they know how to draw a line between showing off and deliberately winding its neck back in. As a concertina of payoffs and sly name checks, the action breezes towards its conclusion, all the while with one glaringly noticeable omission. Where's the music? Where is Ray Parker Jr.'s I Ain't Afraid of No Ghost? Don't worry, it'll be there, plus some genuinely heartwarming surprises along the way. So, if you want some astutely judged fan service with a side order of homeschooling tips from Paul Rudd, i.e. just drop the kids in front of a VHS copy of Cujo or Chucky in Child's Play, then I think I know who you're going to call. And that about wraps it up for this episode. To do a quick recap, we reviewed Sylvester Stallone in the recut version of Rocky IV, Kristen Stewart in Spencer, Edgar Wright's latest movie Last Night in Soho, and the aforementioned Ghostbusters Afterlife. So, if you like what you heard and you fancy having some more no-spoiler reviews delivered to your favourite listening device, then please consider subscribing. Please tell your friends, your family, or anyone else you know who loves movies. Please hit the bell, smash the like, and share the podcast. It really does make a difference, and we do appreciate your support. That said, if there's a recent movie that you've missed or haven't heard us cover, then why not download some of our previous podcasts or drop us a line at info@nospoilerreviews.com so we can include it in an upcoming episode. Until then, please keep safe and take all reasonable precautions, and I wish you all the very best for a spoiler-free time. Look forward to seeing you on December the 14th. All the best. Bye.